keyboard to this computer. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining the 21st Web Chat Show. Today, I'm going to talk about influence and persuasion, which I've been very interested in ever since I got involved in negotiation skills. The first thing I found about the negotiation skills, I started looking at people's body language. I noticed that people didn't pick up body language a lot in meetings, and I watched people rub their noses and move back, fold their arms, all defensive issues. Then I started reading about the work of Robert Cialdini. Robert Cialdini is one of the most famous behavioral psychologists in business and marketing that the world's ever had. They say he's the most famous one, and I was privileged to meet him in Denver, Colorado, Denver, Colorado. Yeah, I got that right. There you go. My geography is not that good last year when he was presenting on the stage at the National Speakers Association meeting. So I'm going to run you through some of the issues that in business, in marketing, and in our lives, we need to take into account, which generally work below the level of unconsciousness. And so the marketeers, the salespeople that know about this, use it on us all the time. TV adverts are based on it. But we, as salespeople, and everyone's a salesperson, really do need to understand them. We need to understand them to make sure we don't get sucked in to falling for the persuasion and influencing, but also there's some subtle things that we should do to make our jobs easier. I have four particular books on this. One is by a guy called Steve Martin with Robert Cialdini, and Gabby, who is one of my mentors and is on the call with us today, has worked with Steve Martin and worked with Robert Cialdini. The other book is Persuasion, which is the book that Cialdini wrote recently, talking about before you get into persuasion, you need to pre-frame it so the person is persuaded to actually see things your way. And his most famous book is called Influence, Science and Practice, which was, this is the fourth edition, and it was written in 2001. And it was the best-selling book in China in 2008, according to the Institute of Management. So that's very interesting. So some things in here which are pretty obvious, but they're not obvious to everybody. And as we talk about common sense isn't that common. So Cialdini came up with six traits of influence, six secrets of influence, and they were liking, reciprocity, authority, social proof, scarcity, and finally, commitment. And I'm going to run you through these and give you a few tips on how you might use them yourself. The first one is liking. And as we all know, if somebody doesn't like you, they're not going to buy from you. We talked about this on previous programs. We talked about you need to know someone, then you need to like them before you end up trusting them. And people only buy from people that they know, like, and trust. And when I use the word buy, I mean sell, I mean influence with ideas, etc., as you well know. I've done a huge mind map today, which I thought you'd be interested in. I had to use A3 rather than A4 because there is so much on influencing. And if you want a copy of that, email me. And the first thing is that people say yes to people they like. So how much energy do we put into our first impressions? Before we meet someone, do we keep a record in our books of what they like, what football team they support, where they went on holiday, what's the name of their kids, etc., to make sure that we know a lot about them. And Will Kinsish talks about the Dale Carnegie issue of being interested rather than interesting. And actually, I had a phone call with someone for 20 minutes yesterday, and he didn't ask me a thing about myself after I'd asked him about 10 questions. And I then decided that I had another meeting to go to and went to it straight away. It was a bit put out, I think, but frankly, I wasn't staying on the call any longer. And I thought of Will, and I thought, I've got to get rid of this guy fast. And I did. So make sure you put yourself in the right frame of mind to make the person like you. And this isn't manipulative, this is common sense. We like people who are like us, which brings me on to how liking can we make ourselves? And Gabby's going to talk about some of the issues around NLP a little bit later, but there's some NLP modalities that will help us help the other person like us, like mirroring and matching body language and using the same language as us. Reciprocity is number two, very important one, reciprocity, used in different ways. So basically what Giordini and the experts found was that if you give somebody something, and it doesn't matter what it is, remembering people's names, a gift, a present, a birthday card, a Christmas card, etc., unconditionally, then there's an obligation in our unconscious minds to give something back. And this obligation spans the whole history of time. And Martin might come on later and tell you the story about Mexico and Ethiopia, which is a very famous story about reciprocity spanning over 50 years. So again, I'm going to ask you, what can you do to give to the people that you want to influence first, because it has to be given first, to influence them to return that favor? And what's really interesting is it doesn't really matter whether it's you buy them a cup of coffee in Starbucks, which I always do, or you buy the first drink in a bar, or you actually take them on an expensive corporate hospitality trip. But of course, remember, these days corporate hospitality is comes under the Bribery Act 2011. And why does it come under the Bribery Act 2011? Because trips to the Monte Carlo Grand Prix, or to you know, a great football ground like the Emirates and places like that, clearly put an obligation back on the client to give you business. So the government cut that out. So again, reciprocity, what can you do? We need to invest in people who we want to invest in us. I always give a copy of my book away when I meet a new client, signed copy of my book, because that's a nice thing to do. It's better than a business card, but it also gives them value. And of course, people tend not to throw books away, and it works under reciprocity. Number three is authority. Giordini came up. This is a huge area where lots and lots of mistakes have been made, but you need to ask yourself, do you look the part? Do you come across the part? Does your website look professional? Do you dress for the status and the person that you're trying to influence and persuade? And little things like, did you know that medical people get better? People take more notice of medical people if they had a stethoscope round their neck, which I thought was really odd when I read this in here, but think about it. They look like they know more about what they're talking about. Captains of there's that terrible story about the Costa Concordia, the ship that sailed out of Venice and then hit the rocks. There were 17 officers on that ship, and no one stood up to the captain, who wanted to go past the rocks and toot the horn to his girlfriend. 4,000 lives were lost in that dreadful thing, and the captain's in an Italian prison now. Crazy air crashes. When the captain of aircraft was advised by the second pilot that they'd gone over the time for de-icing the wings or whatever the issue was, very often it was said in such a meek and mild voice. So assertiveness training had been given to second officers on planes, because the captain has the four stripes, I'm in charge, etc., etc. So look, thinking about what you do and how you do it, how can you influence by people to making sure you look the part, sound the part, come across the part. The fourth trait of influence is called scarcity. It's called FOMO, fear of missing out. In the unconscious mind, if other people are getting things and it says sale ends at 5 o'clock at night, we have this unconscious want to buy something. And of course, this is used on us all the time. Bed shops like Dreams, sale ends at 5 o'clock on Monday. Magnet, sale ends at 5 o'clock on Sunday. The sales usually start on the following Tuesday, and you usually get the discounts, but people rush in to get things that they didn't perhaps need. I was told by somebody that 80% of people around the world have clothes in their wardrobe that they never wear, but they bought them in with fear of missing out. The fifth trait of influence is called social proof, or the other word is called consensus. People want things that other people have bought, have got. So there's a sort of rush to do things that other people have done. And I was just looking at my notes here. Here had some really strange experiments. So I don't know if you've heard of the Stanley Milligram experiment in 1964, which was set up in a university in America, where people were pulled in from the street and asked to give electric shocks to an actor. And they knew that once the electric shocks got over sort of 60%, it was getting pretty risky. So there's a doctor there, experiment, they thought it was for real. And 65% of people, because they were told to by this doctor, and they saw that everybody else was doing it, gave shocks which would have killed the person. The actor was screaming, etc. And so cult issues where people have killed themselves, again, have been caused because everybody else is following the cult leader. The world's going to end at 12 o'clock tonight, and so we all need to commit mass suicide. There's pretty sad things around this, but you've only got to Google it and you will see how it happens, and it's because everybody else is doing it. So what should we do about that? Well, we should have great testimonials on our websites. We should have great testimonials on LinkedIn. If we're doing some charity work, people should be saying nice things about what we're doing. Now, remember that you can't say nice things about yourself because you'll be called a big head, but other people could say nice things about you, and that will be taken as authority. And the last one is commitment. Once people have committed to doing something, it's very hard in our unconscious mind to go back on that commitment, which is why when you go to a car sales room, and by the way, in car selling, they use all these techniques on you at all times. They've been very carefully worked out by the car dealers, people like Inchcape that own 95% of the dealerships in the UK. They've worked out the whole process. And what the car salesman usually says to you is, well, Derek, because I like you so much, we got on so well, liking, have another cup of our free coffee, reciprocity. I'll go and talk to the sales manager and see if I can get you that discount, authority. There's only one of these cars left in the country in that color, in that model. So if you don't buy this one, then you'll miss out on it. Number four, scarcity. And the reason there's only one left is this is a very popular model because everyone's buying it, social proof. And if I do get you that £100 off, we do have a deal, don't we? Commitment. So you've been pre-closed in the sale before he actually goes upstairs and goes to the imaginary manager that's supposedly has the £100 discount, comes down and closes the sale. And he won't say at that point, and I say he because most people selling cars are he's rather than she's, for whatever reason that is. And he won't say, do you still want to buy it? He will say, okay, that's right, the deal's done, just sign here. So they're the six traits of influence that I wanted to mention. I also wanted to mention the use of the word because is a really, really, really powerful word. A lady called Ellen Langer, a psychologist at the Harvard Business School, did some research into the use of the word because with people that were jumping the queue on a photocopying machine. And what she did was she got people to jump the queue without giving a reason. And because most people are generous and compliant, 65% of people agreed the queue could be jumped, even though they're a bit grumpy about the whole thing. And what she did then, she got people to introduce the word because I'm in a rush, because I need to get my kids, because the boss wants this, because I've got to get this done before I go home. What actually happened was it didn't matter what came after the word because, but if they used the word because, they got 93% compliant. Only 7 people objected to the queue jumping. So there's some awful useful things there. And before I hand over to Gabby, just to talk to us for 5 minutes on influence and persuasion and what she learned from working with Steve Martin and some of the other great psychologists, I wanted to tell you about my friend Andrew Henley. Andrew Henley is a barrister. We meet for a coffee at 7 o'clock in the morning when we used to be able to meet for a coffee over in Starbucks and swap a few notes. He said, "Derek, I do my preparation before I go into a case. I'm defending somebody because that's what we have to do in the law. As long as they don't tell us they did it, it's okay to defend them." And he said, "I go in and put myself in a semi-trance as the jury is brought in. And I just totally relaxed, look at the jury and watch how they swear in. And how they swear in, I can tell immediately who the 3 key decision makers are on that jury. And therefore, I know it's them I've got to persuade to like my client. And if they like my client and they believe my defense, then I'm either going to get my client off or I'm going to get their sentence reduced." I said, "Do you really do that?" He said, yeah, because I meditate, I kind of peripheral vision, etc. And that's what I do. I said, "Do other barristers do that?" "Don't think so." He said, "Don't think so at all." But there we are. So I'm going to stop, have a swig of my coffee, if I may. Gabby, if you're unmuted, could you just share some of the things you've learned in neurolinguistics and from working with some of the greats in the world?
So I first met Bob, as in Robert Cialdini, back in the late 90s, early noughties, when he was brought over to the UK by Steve Martin and Gary Colleran, and was very honoured and a privilege to work with them all, actually. And just a couple of things on the authority: there's being an authority and there's being in authority. When you are someone's manager, you are in authority, but if you can build up your kudos through your knowledge, through your empathy, through your understanding of the subject matter, you become an authority, and being an authority is far more influential than being in authority. We all like to, well, not all, some of us like to fight against the authority, whereas if you are an authority, actually we want to listen to Derek, because he is a master negotiator and he has built himself up as the guru. So just that one point. And on reciprocity, the value of what you give and what you take don't have to equal. So it is quite fascinating how a cup of coffee can lead to a £1 million deal. The value is very, very different. The other thing that I have found very useful, and it was an acronym, because I like acronyms because it makes it easy for me to remember, is OAP. Because we all know what an OAP certainly used to be. But for me, OAP is when I want... Will's pointing. When you want someone... You want to influence someone, you want it to be their idea. So if you can create a conversation such that they come up with the idea and they say, "Yes, I'm going to own that," then it's theirs, which feeds into the commitment, because commitment leads to consistency. So if you make a commitment and you make a commitment, you're more likely to stick with that commitment. And as an influencer, what you want them to do is get them to take some sort of action. So it could be that, "Okay, that's great. I tell you what, put it on your Facebook, put it on your LinkedIn, go and send an email to so-and-so." So they're taking some sort of action, which is the A. And then the P is that action is public. So it's not that, "Okay, so I'm going to agree to," and I'm not doing this, Derek, "I'm going to agree to take some notes and send it to you." That's action. And the public is that I'm giving it to him. What he might say is, "Actually, can you send it to Jill as well? Because Jill's taking the notes and she can then put it in the right format." suddenly it becomes even more public. So the action that I've agreed to is going public. Does that make sense?
Yes. Makes total sense. Is that how sort of Weight Watchers and people like that gain a public commitment to people?
Absolutely. So, you know, the very fact that you join Weight Watchers, it's yours. You own it. Yep. You then have to take action. So you have to go. You have to be measured. But you have to be measured publicly in front of all your peers. Not this is what I'm told. I've never been, but this is my understanding. And you also make a commitment as to what you are aiming for. So, you know, you want to lose 10 pounds or whatever it might be. And you're saying it to the whole group. And you're also, they work on the negative influence as well with an element of shaming if you haven't achieved it. And understanding negative influence can be very, very useful when you are influencing. So from an NLP perspective, what I'm looking for as an influencer are, I ask questions and get people into certain states. So it could be a bad experience that they've had with a particular insurance company. And I want to notice the language they use and where their eyes go and really get them into a state. And I'll make some kind of, often a facial expression. Ooh, not nice. I might make a sound. Or I might touch them in a particular, oh no, you don't want to do that. Oh no, no, no. And that creates an anchor whilst they're in the state. You then get them talking about a great experience that they've had, and you'll notice that it is different. It might be very subtle, but it will be different. And you talk about how wonderful it is and how great, and you'll create a different expression or a different sound. Your voice will be different. And you go, oh, wow, that's great. And you create a different anchor. You then go back to neutral and you might talk about your proposition. But as you start talking about your proposition, are you going to be going to the, ooh, or are you going to go to the, this is my proposition? And it's so simple, just through expression and tone of voice and action, but it can make a massive, massive difference in getting people to come your way.
Brilliant, Gabby. Brilliant. Can I come back to you in a minute on that? I just wanted to raise a couple of things, which are very useful in business, because I'm conscious of the time, but I want to record all this and get this all down for you guys. I wanted to talk about perceptual contrast, which comes out of the work of Gialdini. If a restaurant shows a bottle of wine at £35, that looks really expensive. But if they put at the top of the wine list a bottle of wine at £60, suddenly the £35 wine in our minds becomes much cheaper. Car salesrooms do the same thing. You usually test drive the top of the range car at £35,000, but the salesman says to you, well, actually, Will, you don't need that car from what I've learned from you. That's got all the bells and whistles on it. We've got a car here at £28,000 that does absolutely the same thing, but actually doesn't have the 16-speaker stereo system. What that does, of course, is makes the car sound much cheaper, £7,000 cheaper, but it also builds rapport, connects with Will, because Will thinks, oh, this guy's really honest. He's selling me the middle range car. But of course, he's also using the power of three prices, the really expensive car, the middle range one, which is the one they always sell, and the one that probably hasn't even got a steering wheel on it, but you can get for £10,000. But you know what I mean. Mr. Carlucci, who set up the restaurants when he came over from Italy in the 70s, and sadly, Carlucci's went into administration a few weeks ago, had on his menu £3,500 Vespa scooter, motorbike scooter, at the top of the menu. And then the contrast principle was, and you could actually buy that and order it from him. The contrast principle was his meals looked much cheaper. Giordini talks about that in his book. And I thought, oh, that's a different way of doing it. A couple of other things. Waiters got bigger tips when they left not one candy in the pot for you when you paid the bill, but two candies. In fact, the statistics are that they got a 3.4% increase in tips with one sweet and a 14.4% increase in tips with two sweets. And this isn't just making it up. These aren't one. These are properly researched experiments with under all sort of university proper things. So again, little things like that. So two things rather than once. One, JCPenney in America used to price everything at 0.99p, etc. They decided to do what I think Marks and Spencer's did 10 years ago in the UK, to price everything in round numbers. Their sales went down 30% when they priced things in round numbers. So funny numbers work again. So that penny, which is worth nothing, made a difference to 30% of their sales. And the last thing I wanted to mention was on yes tag questions. Those of you that have got a copy of my book will have read about the use of yes and no tag questions. Car people or salespeople in shops got a much better reaction when they came up quietly to people and said, "You will let me know if I can help you, won't you?" So that's a statement followed by a yes tag question. A yes tag question sets up a yes in people's minds, and they felt at that point they could go back to the salesman. So they got better salesperson, they got better results. Gabby, I think you had a couple of other things to mention.
Yeah, I was just going to say, my daughter, when she first started working, worked in a restaurant, and it's one of the first things that I taught her. And it's that idea of when someone says, "Well, what wine shall I go for?" Because I was thinking of this one, to always offer one that's slightly cheaper, which initially is counterintuitive because you want to make more money. But actually, that way, the waitress or waiter gets bigger tips. So, you know, people will feel that they're being looked after. And it goes back again to this consensus that we, or the social proof, as Derek has called it, we like to follow people who are like us or that who we aspire to be. So this idea of going for a particular car, well, actually, if you can also put in some stories around, oh, you know, I've just sold one of these to someone who you can see is like you or that you would aspire to be like. So also consider the person that you're wanting to influence, who do they want to be like?
Or who? Yeah, absolutely. They're pitching. So when I was pitching for Barclays to big clients, I would tell stories about deals that we'd done with other companies, and I wouldn't mention the name. I said, "There's another supermarket like yours that you'll know of, and this is what we did for them." And you know, that wasn't breaking confidentiality, it was probably bending the rules a little bit, but I wanted to close a sale. The most important thing to me was to get the business in competition with the other banks. I just want to bring Martin in if he's there. Martin and Gabby have both helped me on some of my biggest workshops and masterclasses, etc. And Martin tells this great story out of Giordini's book about Mexico and Ethiopia. Are you there, Martin? And are you?
Yes, I've unmuted myself.
Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure. Yes, I suppose it's the most impressive example that Giordini gives about reciprocity. He talks about Italy invading Ethiopia, I think in about 1938 from memory. And the first country to stand up internationally on Ethiopia's behalf was Mexico, of all places, about as far away from Ethiopia as you can get. And 50 years later or thereabouts, I think in 1987, there was an earthquake in Mexico City, quite a devastating earthquake. And the first country to come to Mexico's aid was Ethiopia. So the reciprocity took quite a long time. It took 50 years. But I've only just recently come across an even greater gap between the handing and the taking back. And if you just bear with me a second, I'll actually read it out to you. It says, more than 170 years ago, the Choctaw Nation sent $170 to starving Irish families during the potato famine. A sculpture in County Cork commemorates the generosity of the tribe, itself a poor tribe. But recently, the ties between Ireland and the Native Americans, the American tribe, have grown. Now, hundreds of Irish people are repaying that old kindness, giving to a charity drive for two tribes suffering from COVID-19. As of Tuesday, the fundraiser had raised more than $1.8 million to support those tribes, providing clean water, food and health supplies to the people of the Navajo Nation and the Hopi Reservation. So that's an even bigger gap between one item of generosity and the next. The other thing that occurs to me here is we see it on the internet all the time. If you've ever booked a hotel on the internet, which I'm sure you all have, there's great evidence that they use all sorts of influencing factors. 27 people are looking at this room as you are. We've sold 20, 30 rooms in this hotel in the last 2 days. This scores 9.7 out of 10 on our quality feedback program. Buy now or you're going to lose out, sort of thing. So they're using social proof, scarcity, social proof scarcity and something else. I can't remember.
The commitment there.
The commitment to get you to sign up. So you don't realise they're doing it to you. And even if you do realise they're doing it to you, you can't help. You still feel the pressure to make the booking.
Guys, that's the most amazing thing about this. That's why it's so important to us high achievers to be aware of it. And also at the same time to put it in ethically in what we do with everybody we know, like, and trust, because nothing happens if we don't sell or persuade or influence. So the more of that we can do. Jeff Ram sends everybody a Christmas card. A guy called Matt Crabtree sends everybody a bar of chocolate at Christmas. Everybody he's ever known. I still get one. I haven't seen him for 10 years. How you do it is up to you. And let me tell you, most people don't do most of this. Most people don't know about most of this. In both my books, Power Negotiating and Win-Win, I have summarized this chapter, and I've summarized it in this the work of Gialdini, because I've summarized it in between negotiating tactics and bargaining and haggling skills, because it's just so important. And just to remind you, and then I'll throw it open for questions before we turn the video off, just to remind you, the six traits of influence are liking, reciprocity, giving things unconditionally for nothing, authority, coming across looking the part, scarcity, people want things that they might miss out on, the fear of missing out, FOMO, social proof, people will buy things and be influenced things by things that other people have done, and finally, commitment. Once it's easier to say no at the beginning than it is to say no at the end. That's why when someone comes up to us, some offer, we go, no, I don't want that, because once you get into the conversation, you might get sucked in. And these things that we think sometimes only happens to us, of course, happen to everybody. And that's the research of these behavioral scientists who've spent a lot of time on it. So I was privileged to see Gialdini. Gialdini and his team are still working very hard on the whole thing on influence. And you can see how the advertisers use a lot of this all the time. So have we got any questions in the chat box? Fantastic discussion from Ryan, giving unconditionally really important. No questions in the chat box at the moment. I'll unmute everybody. Put your hands up if you want to ask a question, a couple of questions, and then we can stop the recording and we will go to any private discussions that anyone wants. You're all unmuted, guys. I'll open the frames up. Any questions? Tony from Bournemouth.
Very interesting today. Could you say, though, that it is all really contrived self-interest and that you believe half of what you see and none of what you hear?
Well, I'll answer that first, but Gabby will have a view on that from neurolinguistics, because in neurolinguistics you get accused very often of manipulating people, etc. Well, it's going on all the time, Tony. That's the real issue, that all the marketeers and all the salespeople are using it not so well. So, A, we need to know about it, because it is the way the brain works and it is the way the brain's wired. So that's a fact. And I sometimes say, is it any different from ladies wearing makeup, guys having Botox, which there's quite a lot of in the States, or me wearing aftershave, because they are all subliminal influences. And actually, there was a couple of things. The tallest person is usually the most powerful influencer, believe it or not. So they can very often use that. And well, it's there in the world. That's all I would say. So we need to be aware of it. But some of the subtle things, like buying someone a coffee first or buying them a drink, you know, it's just good. Nice, feels good. Gabby, have you got something to comment?
Yeah, I mean, it can be perceived as manipulating, but the reality is we are being influenced all the time, and we are influencing ourselves all the time. So in this current situation, there are people that are sitting and listening to the TV, to the radio, to all sorts of things, and working themselves up into quite a depressed state without realizing that they are influencing their mood. So the more you understand it, the more it empowers you to feel better more of the time and to help others feel better more of the time for no good reason. So one of our family mottos is go out and make people feel good for no good reason, because we're influencing them, but not for gain, just because it does make us feel good, but also it leaves the other person feeling good. And I don't see any harm in getting the right hormones being fired off to make people feel better, and actually as a result of it probably be a lot healthier and build their immune system and help them survive this and any other situations that life throws at you.
Right. I agree entirely. There is too much negative influencing at the moment. And that's why I say, believe none of what you hear.
That's a great question, Tony. Thanks for raising that. I say sometimes with a smile on my face, go out and ruin somebody's miserable day by cheering them up. When I was in the States, I got it on my bookshelf here. I couldn't help buying it. You know, sometimes you buy books for the title, it was just called Handling Toxic People, and I just had to buy it. There's not a lot of content in it, it's all the obvious stuff, but you know, with toxic people, negatrons, people who go around moaning and groaning, and before you know where you are unconsciously, you're feeling pretty miserable as well. Well, you know, the NLPers will say put a little bubble wrap around yourself and imagine that negativity is bouncing off of you, and move on pretty quickly. Sometimes on the way up, when you're on the way up, you're always learning, aren't you? Like us, you got to let some people out at a lower floor before you can go higher, because they're dragging you down. One more question. Sorry, Gabby.
When Oprah Winfrey was asked the secret of her success, she said, I stick to radiators and stay away from drains.
Oh, fabulous. 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 Guys, I'm going to turn the recording off now. We'll stay on the line for as long as you want us to, but and you can ask any questions you didn't want to ask that might have been going on YouTube. So thanks for joining me today. Robert Giordini, Influence Science and Practice, Persuasion, Influencing Makes the world go round, and it's critical to sales influencing and negotiations. Thanks for joining Derek Harden's YouTube channel, and there's lots of other YouTube clips up there for your use that we've been putting up over the last 7 weeks of lockdown. Take care.